next presentation is by Astrid Rutzel. Astrid works at Deakin University in Geelong, Australia. And she and Mark have been working together for some years. Astrid brought integral theory into the research program at Deakin University. And this is her first project delineating that and telling us what she learned about using it.
Yeah, so the project is called An Integral Sustainable Design Approach to Human Inhabitation of Architectural Spaces. And I'll explain in the next few slides what we mean by that. I'd like to start with the team. So we've got Mark on the team, who is the author of this Integral Sustainable Design Approach that we are using as a foundation for the project. Then we have an architectural theorist in Akari. We've got two psychologists with Anna and Lucy, and myself with a background in architectural sustainability. So that was also a realization that we had attempting to do an integral research project, that we realized, okay, we can't just be in one discipline. We need to incorporate different viewpoints from various disciplines. And this is a small scale project, so the number of players was somewhat limited by the budget we had. Why are we doing this, or why are we looking at this topic? One is that people are the biggest unknown in energy predictions or energy simulations. There's usually in these building rating schemes, the energy consumption of the building, what goes through the building envelope is considered. What happens with different people occupying the building is usually not really considered, and that makes a big unknown in energy predictions. And then the second is what ties in with what Mark just presented, this idea that if people care about nature, they are more likely to act in a sustainable manner, to be more environmentally responsible. So if we can design buildings to connect people to nature, we are indirectly enhancing, hopefully, the environmental responsibility of the population. So there has been some research on occupant behavior on what people do in buildings, what the interaction between people and buildings is in probably the last decade, and I've been involved in some of that research. So this image comes from an international research project where the attempt was to map out all the different influences on the interaction between people and buildings. And what's currently being researched as occupant behavior is this part in the red box there, which also basically shows how limited the current understanding of people's interaction with buildings currently is. So what we've been proposing is to take maybe all of this into consideration, and what we also found is that there's a distinction between the objective and the subjective parameters. And that's what links us to integral theory, which also has this distinction. So we are attempting to develop a combined objective and subjective, or qualitative and quantitative, assessment of human inhabitation of architectural spaces, and we are basing that on the Integral Sustainable Design Framework, which is the foundation that Mark had already developed. As usual in research, we start with an overarching research question. So this one is the overall question for the whole project, where we are asking, can mixed research methods be integrated via spatial and temporal patterns for a fuller understanding of building inhabitation? So the starting point, or the theoretical basis, is this framework that Mark just presented, the Integral Sustainable Design Approach, based on the four quadrants and the four levels. And then we've been trying to map what we currently knew about occupants' interaction with buildings into the four quadrants. And we actually realized that everything we've been talking about so far is basically only the upper right quadrant. And what's been missing is all the other three. So what's been researched so far was a lot about measurable indoor or outdoor environmental conditions and observable behaviors, like things that we can measure or observe. What was very much missing, especially in a lot of buildings that are labeled as green, is the experiential side. So how do people experience nature in these buildings? what are cultural narratives or norms that are in which these experiences are situated, and what patterns of spatial architectural orders happen in these buildings. So there was a whole lot of context that is very familiar to architects, was basically left out, and we were interested in bringing that back in our research. So we started this relatively small scale pilot case study using the campus, our campus buildings at Deakin University. So this is the case study space, one floor level at our waterfront campus, which has, you can see from the images here, various indoor spaces, an outdoor courtyard, some semi-outdoor spaces. So there was, architecturally, there was quite a bit of variety. So we were interested in what impact that had on people's experience of the space. And then we were using the four quadrants, we were developing research questions for each of the quadrants. We realized that one research question can't really cover all the four quadrants, so we needed at least four. We ended up with eight, two for each. So in the upper left quadrant for the experiences, we are asking what are the spatial temporal patterns of individual occupants' experience and individual occupants' perception of territory. In the upper right, we are asking what are the spatial temporal patterns of measured or simulated conditions and environment responsive occupant behaviors. In the lower right, we are asking what are the spatial temporal patterns of formal architectural order as well as activity and use. And in the lower left, we are asking what are the background cultural narratives as context to individual occupant experiences and behaviors, and what are the spatial patterns of the design narratives and concepts intended by the architect. So here's a few more details on how we're going to do that. Now that we had all these research questions, we also needed a number of different research methods to actually answer these questions. So in the upper left quadrant, we are using cognitive mapping based on speak aloud protocols. So that's also why we have the psychologists on the team, because these are methodologies that are more common in psychology than in architecture. What we did is we sent 20 student participants around in our test space. They were equipped with what we were staging there with a wearable camera on their head that was recording roughly what people were looking at, and also they were recording an audio of the narration of people. We trained people to talk about their experience while they were moving through the space, and the audio of that was recorded as well. So here are some impressions of what that looked like. What we basically did was we told each participant to go around the space five times, once to identify the most intense sensation of temperature, then lighting, then sound, then airspeed, and at the end, ask them to identify a preferred place to study. So this little video here shows one occupant's, it's a couple of photos put together to show like one occupant's search for the preferred place to study, which would take about 15 minutes. So it's a 45-second condensed version of what they were looking at, walking around, and then finally settling onto a particular spot. And you can also see how various the spaces were that they experienced in this walkthrough.
I love the way it's not about how we usually see things.
Yeah, it's all.
Or how we see them in pictures. It's how we do see them.
Yeah, it's very non-curated in a way as well.
Were you having participants that had never been to the campus before?
No, they were all students at that campus, so most of them knew the spaces quite well. So accompanying this participant walking through, we had this comfort card over there, which was measuring on-site the environmental parameters, indoor and outdoor environmental parameters such as temperature, airspeed, and so forth. And we were also recording weather data from the Bureau of Meteorology to link the indoor and the outdoor conditions. in the lower right quadrant. Our methods are analytic spatial diagramming, as well as programmatic post-occupancy analysis, which is basically us revisiting these spaces, particularly the ones that were highlighted by the participants as somehow special, and then diagramming the patterns that we could observe, like what are typical usage patterns on this floor plan and what are typical architectural characteristics of the spaces that people pointed out to us. And this kind of diagramming is a common methodology in architectural theory, so that's something as architects we are somewhat trying to do that. In the lower left quadrant, we were using semi-structured interviews. So following this walkthrough that the participants did in the space, they sat down with one of our psychologists on the team, and we basically questioned them on their upbringing or the place where they spent most of their life in terms of the architectural as well as the indoor and outdoor climatic conditions in which they have spent most of their lives. So we are interested to find out whether that kind of preconditions the experience that they are having in this space that we sent them through. And what we are also going to do is to do some interpretive readings of the space and to analyze the design brief and the design narrative of the architect to see if what the architect intended with their design is actually what the people are experiencing, so we can compare these two things. And this is just an overview, like all the questions and the methods put together into the four quadrants. And then we are ending up with a lot of data. So the first step was this data collection, various types of data. We've got the videos, we've got temperature measurements, like Excel sheets full of numbers. We've got the interview recordings, so we've got various types of data. And our first step is to analyze the data through the value system within each quadrant. So that's a bit of an introvert exercise. We are taking the data generated within a quadrant and we are analyzing that with the traditional methodologies that belong to that discipline as a first step to make sense of the data in the value system that generated it. And the next step will be to do a more transdisciplinary analysis, which is probably a little more extrovert, where we're actually trying to use the value systems also from other quadrants to look at the data and to see what do we get when we are looking, when we are linking the quadrants and we are, when we are transcending these disciplinary boundaries. And that's the part where we expect a few surprises may happen and where we are quite curious what comes out of this. One difficulty we had with the research was that all these different types of data, in terms of linking them, there had to be some form of common denominator or something that the data could be linked to, like the one unifying element. And in this case, we found the space as a reference point. So for the preliminary analysis, what we've already started to analyze is this preferred place to study that we asked people to find. So we were able to map on the floor plan, you can see on the left, the spatial distribution of these preferred places to study. And this allows us now to identify the architectural characteristics of the most mentioned spaces, like the ones that were the most highlighted by the participants. We can now go back and analyze the spatial characteristics. And interestingly, we were looking for the most and the least preferred place to study. What was very interesting for us was to find out that they are just separated by one glass wall and they're actually a meter apart from each other. So you can see here on the left-hand side, there's this kind of green table area, which was highlighted as most preferred. Least preferred is the adjacent atrium. So they are both looking into each other. And that was quite an interesting insight for us. There's a number of influencing parameters that people pointed out in their walkthrough when they were explaining why they selected this space and not another one. They were talking about noise levels, qualities of adjacent spaces, lighting, access to sockets or computers, type of activity in the space, temperature, airflow, furniture, privacy and protection. So these were just a few of the parameters that came up in people's discussion. And these are just a few examples in a little more detail illustrated. So the degree of exposure was one of the very obvious ones that most people pointed out. And on the left, you can see it's this kind of cave structure, these little study nooks. They're almost like dug into the wall there to the left. So there's basically protection from three sides, and then they overlook this atrium to the right, which is the least preferred space. And then on the other hand, this big atrium, high ceiling heights, very, very spacious, very exposed. And you can also see the difference of like this seeing and being seen in this protected space over there in the red box. You can see people are protected from being overlooked, but they can very well see into this atrium space. Whereas if you're sitting here on these tables in the middle of the atrium, you're being observed from 360 degrees around you and the vertical of four-story atrium. So it couldn't get more exposed, I guess. What was also mentioned a lot was the furniture. There's like fixed furniture with soft seating surfaces at a normal human height for the preferred space, and then mobile furniture, hard seating surfaces, and high tables and chairs didn't really contribute to making the least preferred space any more attractive. And yes, in summary, so this is, we've been developing this kind of framework alongside this study that we did. And this is a summary of trying to integrate the four levels with the four quadrants and to describe a little bit what happens in these 16 spaces, as we are calling them, at different levels, looking from different quadrants, so we can start to understand these experiences that people have in their space. We can actually give them this kind of cosmic address, and we could map them. We could say this is an experience that relates to this level at that, this quadrant at that level, or it's an architectural characteristic at that level in this quadrant. So that's where we are heading. We are not, this is still work in progress to actually analyze the data enough to be able to do that. But this is what our current map looks like. And here's just one example, zooming into basically the upper right quadrant, which is the traditional territory of occupant behavior, where we are saying at the traditional level we had manual controls and responsive occupants. At the modern level, we had this idea that we can create artificial environments that are superior to outdoor natural environments, which basically created passive occupants. They had nothing to improve. It was all like the machines doing it. In terms of control, it was the machine doing it for the occupants. Then postmodern came in the realization that this fully automated control has its side effects as well, something like sick building syndrome and things that the modernists didn't see coming. So that meant buildings opened up again. There was, again, interaction between indoor and outdoor is allowed again, but it's still controlled, this time at room scale, and it kind of activates the occupants again. And at the integral level, the scale of control gets even smaller. Like you can see from building to personal scale, from modern to integral, like the scale gets finer. And we are ending up with more proactive occupants. They kind of understand their role in the building as a larger system, and they can participate in that as a system rather than being just controlling their own personal, for example, thermal perception. So this is just to give you an idea what we mean by these different levels just in one quadrant as an example. In summary, we've got a few preliminary conclusions just in attempting this integral research. One is that this integral collaboration and integral and interdisciplinary collaboration was a source of motivation for the team. Like it's actually fun to do this and to collaborate with different people from very different backgrounds on a topic that is new territory for everyone. What we found was there's a few clashes between quality standards. So some quality standards in psychology don't really match quality standards for research in architecture, so we are finding some clashes a bit interesting to navigate. Also interesting is a bit of a lack of institutional commitment. So even though most of us are working at the same university, the Department of Psychology has also different understandings of what counts as research as opposed to what counts for us in the Department of Architecture. So some outputs we are producing are good for some of us on the team, but not for others, and that's not really helping integral research. So we suggest that maybe the institutions also might have to come to a more integral understanding. We had some restrictions through university policy that was mainly like ethics and safety considerations that we had to navigate.
So why you didn't see any people in the photos?
Yeah. And then this map that I showed before was a very interesting but also not an easy task to develop these 16 prospects, the four levels in four quadrants. Another thing we found was this necessity of a common language amongst the different disciplines. When a psychologist talks about space, they have sometimes something different in mind than what an architect has in mind when they hear space. So we ended up with a couple of linguistic discussions where we actually realizing, do we need more new terms for something so it's not loaded in one or the other discipline? That's why we are talking about inhabitation and not occupant behavior, because occupant behavior is upper right loaded. And we are expecting there may be a few more of these terms that we'll have to communicate about. And yeah, last but not least, we ended up with a very rich data set, which we've only started analyzing, and it'll take a little while to get through all this and to if you don't want to do it properly. The 8 research questions and a number of methodologies they exponentially multiply the time that we need to analyze that. Okay, and that's it.